This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Hop on board with Bumper to Bumper, our program about automotive news and all things roadworthy. With sources like Car and Driver, Popular Mechanics, and Motor Trend, you'll be in the driver's seat. Classic, vintage, sporty, or modern, you'll hear it here. Automotive news and all that's roadworthy, it's Bumper to Bumper, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Bumper to Bumper. I am your reader, J.J. Fabini, with the audio reading service, part of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We start today at MotorTrend.com, copyright 2025, Hearst Autos Incorporated. Driven, the $325,000 Ford Mustang GTD has big GTD energy. Stunningly easy to drive fast, the GTD is a cheat code for the road and the racetrack. This is written by Scott Evans. Die mad, haters. It's lame, you cried. The GTD is too big and too fat, and its Nürburgring time wasn't fast enough. Yeah, and? There's exactly one thing wrong with the 2025 Ford Mustang GTD, and it ain't the weight. 4,386 pounds. That's the number. Ford didn't really want to advertise it, but enthusiasts dug a lower number out of EPA certification documents, and the company has finally clarified it. It's roughly 400 to 500 pounds heavier than a Mustang Dark Horse, depending on options, and nearly 1,200 pounds more than a Porsche 911 GT3 RS, a car that Ford could not shut up about beating with the GTD. Seems bad, but it isn't. You'd never know it weighed that much from behind the wheel. Not on the street, not on the track. At no point does the GTD feel heavy. The perceived weight of the car is no different than the Dark Horse, and it imparts feelings of solidity and stability, not laboriousness and dullness. Even the electric power steering system delivers feedback good enough to fool most drivers into thinking it's hydraulic. In fact, the GTD is shockingly easy to drive fast. It is so planted, so settled, and so confident, anyone can get in it and go fast. The grip exceeds what even the experienced supercar driver expects in cornering, accelerating, braking, or any combination thereof. The only street car that compares is, unsurprisingly, the 911 GT3 RS. As it happens, both Ford and Porsche held their premier driving events at the same track, the Thermal Club. They even used the same track configuration, and I attended both, making me one of the few people who can directly compare them, albeit 2 years apart. Sounds like a lot, but there are only two corners on the track that matter for our purposes, the longest one and the tightest one. It's in those turns these cars tip their hands. The first is the never-ending bowl, a constant radius left-hander, where any car will understeer wide if you carry even a little too much speed. It's where both the GT3 RS and the GTD prove their downforce claims. In 99% of streetcars, claimed downforce is effectively meaningless, as it typically does not apply until speeds that you struggle to reach, even on a racetrack. Well, these cars are the exception. The amount of speed that you can carry, the amount of lateral G's you can pull, puts other cars to shame. No other streetcar go around this kind of corner so fast. And it's a combination of tires, suspension geometry, and downforce that makes it possible. That, the big, heavy Mustang, could feel just as fast and capable as the featherweight GT3 RS in the same corner, is a monumental achievement. The second is less a corner and more an angle. It's so sharp and so acute, it might as well be a triangle. You crawl around it at what feels like walking speed. Try to enter too quickly and you get massive understeer. Get impatient exiting and it's wild oversteer. This is the corner that caught out the GT3 RS, where low speed means no downforce, and suddenly that incredible front-end grip was reduced to relatively paltry streetcar levels. Only perfect execution would avoid understeer. Not the Ford. Between its absurdly broad 325 width front tires and an aggressive factory-spec track alignment, the GTD would not let go. It took massive, deliberate trail braking and sharp steering input to get a little push as I entered the corner. On the way out, the even more ridiculous 345 rear tires and crazy rear suspension put the power down in ways that you cannot believe when 815 horsepower and 664 pound-feet of torque are part of the conversation. Only at the end of my lapping session, when the tires were worn out, did I provoke significant oversteer by deliberately going hard on the throttle super early with tons of steering still dialed in. Even then, Ford specified a custom Michelin Pilot Cup 2R with a very progressive breakaway. So the car never snaps out. It rotates and it drifts, but it doesn't try to put you backwards in a ditch. How much the rear end will swing depends on the new variable traction control feature. Accessed by holding down the ESC off button and adjusted with the cruise control buttons, it offers 5 settings and a full off position. You only feel it working in the full on setting, and only if you're trying to get the car sideways. In its lowest setting, it acts as a safety net when you do get the tail out. We had zero concerns about running it full off, as simply lifting or upshifting during a power oversteer easily brought the rear end back in line. Or leave the shifting to a computer just as clever as the one that controls the Porsche's PDK, and power oversteer becomes even less of a concern. Those barely road-legal tires and the massive Brembo carbon ceramic brakes that slow them have no trouble dropping velocity either. I lapped the GTD in 85-degree heat without a hint of brake fade. Curb weight be damned. The pads bite hard and immediately, the pedal requiring a light touch but allowing you to modulate pressure constantly as you feel out the braking zone. What's more, the car is impressively stable under hard braking, even over bumps, which, along with the tame limit behavior, sends driver confidence through the roof. The first time you go around a corner fast in the GTD, you know that you have nothing to worry about. At no point does it feel light and nimble in the manner of the GT3 RS, but it doesn't matter. It's just a different way of getting the job done equally well. One for the road. The GTD's poise and confidence on the track carry over to the street, too. Bumps don't matter, whether they're in the middle of a corner or a heavy braking zone. Carry too much speed into a corner? Well, just turn more. Or trail brake more. It doesn't care. The GTD will gladly save you from yourself without breaking a sweat. This car is so forgiving, wrecking it would take a monumental act of bad driving. It ain't bad on the track either, which is far more than the Porsche can say. Driving a GT3 RS on a California freeway can be classified as a form of masochism. You could say the same about the GTD if you forgot to take it out of track mode or turn off sport damping mode or both. Like the Ford GT before it, the GTD's track mode stiffens both the shocks and springs, the latter by literally compressing the softer of the two springs at each corner with a hydraulic ram, leaving only the stiffer spring able to move. Uncork it and turn down the dampers, and the ride quality is considerably worse than that of a dark horse, but noticeably better than a GT3 RS's. So, what's wrong with it then? You already know, because you've seen the photos. That's a $40,000 interior and a $325,000 car. The design and the materials quality of this generation of Mustang have underwhelmed from the start, and little has been done to update it for the GTD. The Recaro seats are the biggest addition, and they creak under heavy cornering loads. The bolstering and comfort, at least, are excellent. Otherwise, it's some carbon fiber trim on the dash and around the flimsy dial shifter, which really needs some stops in it when you get all the way to drive or park. And an updated Dark Horse steering wheel. Those consist of some red buttons instead of silver, suede leather inserts on the rim, and a suede leather stripe at the 12 o'clock position that's already had its color worn off in our car which has 6,000 test miles on the odometer. Finally, there's a new track button next to the engine start-stop button, which brings up a special menu on the infotainment screen. Here you'll find the ability to turn on and off active aerodynamics, the launch control, the line lock burnout feature, which is limited to 15 seconds, and all the performance trackers. Since Ford won't reveal the 0 to 60 time, we used the acceleration timer to record a 3.38 second best run on unprepped surface, which we think could be brought down closer to 3.3 seconds with fresh tires and enough attempts. The glass is all shared with other Mustangs, which helps keep the interior noise levels down. Rearward visibility is almost non-existent until you pass 35 miles an hour and the rear wing opens. Weight savings were instead found in reducing some of the coatings under the carpet. Ford says it didn't touch the thermal barrier, but your right leg still gets painfully hot after a few hours of driving. In all, though, the interior is wildly underwhelming for the price. Ford will no doubt make the argument that every dollar went into performance, and we don't doubt it. That doesn't mean, though, that this is what customers of a $325,000 plus car expect. Still, it would appear to be a moot point, as Ford has received roughly four times as many applications from prospective buyers than it has announced build slots. The GTD is only confirmed for the 2025 and 2026 model years, though Ford said roughly the same thing about the Ford GT, and it's still technically in production 7 years later. What is a GTD? Ford's maxed-out Mustang is a lot of things. Ford marketing calls it a supercar with the soul of a Mustang, and has positioned it as a road-legal version of the Mustang GT3 race car, but better. This kind of boasting feels like setting the car up to fail, but the parts list backs it up. The name derives from the GT Daytona class in IMSA Racing, essentially America's version of the FIA's International GT3 class. The Mustang GTD shares far more than a name with the race car, though. Both use the same chassis as a standard Mustang, in this case diverted from the production assembly line in Michigan to race car and exotic road builder Multimatic in Ontario, Canada, where the rear fenders, trunk, and rear seat are cut out. The trunk and rear seat volumes are filled with an 8-speed dual-clutch transaxle with integrated electronically controlled limited-slip differential. Cargo can go on behind front seats, but that's it. Above and around that lives an integral link rear suspension with pushrod and rocker arm actuated springs and Multimatic ASV electronically controlled spool valve shocks. Pushing the transmission to the rear of the car improves the weight balance to a neutral 50-50. A hydraulic system mounted where the trunk used to be, alongside the transaxle cooler, fans, and ducting, compresses the softer springs at all four corners when the track mode is engaged, lowering the front 1.6 inches and the rear 1.2. Similarly, the hydraulic rams and the front shocks raise the nose 1.6 inches when the front axle lift is engaged by moving the opposite direction. The hydraulic system is also employed to actuate the active aerodynamics. The rear wing opens above 35 miles per hour in most scenarios to reduce drag, closing as the computer sees fit to increase rear downforce. Likewise, the computer opens and closes flaps under the right of the car, under the front of the car to increase or decrease front downforce. There is no way to manually actuate the aerodynamic devices, although you can turn them off, which leaves them in high downforce mode. Providing both mechanical and electrical power is the latest iteration of Ford's Predator 5.2-liter supercharged V8. It now features a dry sump oiling system, the aluminum tank for which is a structural element helping mount the power takeoff that connects to a carbon fiber drive shaft. The oiling system, along with raising the red line another 150 RPM from the last iteration in the F-150 Raptor R, helped bump power to new heights. A secondary surfboard intake over the top of the primary engine air intake allows 2.3-liter supercharger to breathe deep enough. It'll drain the 16-gallon fuel tank in less than 200 miles, driven nicely, much sooner driven like it's supposed to be, so plan accordingly. Ford Racing strut tower brace over the engine is the most visible of the additional chassis bracing. The optional track package adds the active aerodynamics, which are otherwise fixed, the longer front splitter, the dive planes on the nose, and the hood flicks at the leading edge of the hood vents. Ford won't disclose a price for the package. The mesh in the hood vents can be easily removed to increase airflow at track events, and Ford encourages that you do so. Lighter magnesium wheels will eventually be an option, although Ford won't say when or how much they'll cost. The standard wheels are forged aluminum and were used for the Nürburgring record attempts. Finally, the bodywork is almost entirely replaced with carbon fiber. For crush safety, the roof rails must remain metal, and for cost reasons, the door skins stay metal too. Unless, of course, you pay an undisclosed amount for the liquid carbon package, which replaces them with carbon fiber as well and saves 30 pounds. As well as getting rid of all the paint and making almost the entire exterior exposed carbon fiber. Well, you're too late. Ford has closed the application system, so if you haven't gotten yours already, it's too late. On top of that, GTD team members tell me they've already selected all the successful applicants and will be reaching out to them in the next few months, inviting them to place orders. Technically, that means that they're not all sold yet, but it's a distinction without a difference, as Ford has plenty of backups if anyone declines their invitation. How much those lucky few will pay will be between them and Ford. The company would not share any pricing beyond the base $325,000. Beyond the optional wheels, the active aerodynamics, and the track package, most of these options are cosmetic. Whether they'll push the car over 400 grand remains to be seen, but we won't be surprised if it happens. Up next from MotorTrend.com, oh, you lucky bastard. The 2025 Toyota GR Corolla versus the 2025 Volkswagen Golf R. These 300-ish horsepower cruise missile compacts pack thrills for days. But which one is the all-around better car? This is written by Aaron Gold. Some say the hot hatch segment is dying, but nothing will make you feel more alive than taking a fast drive on a curvy road in the Toyota GR Corolla or the Volkswagen Golf R. Both cars storm into 2025 with more power and a host of other useful improvements, including a newly optional automatic transmission for the Toyota. We count these all-wheel drive, turbocharged terrors among our favorite thrill rides, but which is better? Sit down, strap in, shut up, and hang on as we attack the twisties and figure out whether the GR Corolla or the Golf R delivers the most delight for your dollar. Meet the challengers, Corolla's Lightning versus VW's Thunder. The GR Corolla sped straight into our hearts when it made our debut at the 2023 model year. And in fact, our very own Johnny Lieberman, EV fanatic Corolla hater, was so taken that he bought one for himself. In the unlikely event that you are unfamiliar, the critical thing to know about the GR is it has as much in common with a regular Corolla as lightning does with a lightning bug. Its 1.6-liter turbocharged three-cylinder engine delivers 300 horsepower, that's 185 ponies per liter, to all four wheels. And for 2025, this mighty mite gets a 22-pound-foot bump to match the Golf R's 295 pound-feet of torque, plus a new 8-speed automatic transmission. Don't worry, purists, the 6-speed stick is still available. A new top-of-the-line Premium Plus model adds a carbon fiber roof panel, hood vents, matte black wheels, and a powertrain cooling package. Base price for the basic 6-speed car is $39,995, and our automatic Premium Plus test car with options such as a chassis brace and floor mats? Really? Floor mats? We're still paying extra for those? Stickered for $50,144. The Golf R is the old hand, having been part of Volkswagen US's lineup off and on since 2012. For 2025, it too gets a power bump from 315 to 328 horsepower with no change in torque. Unfortunately, the manual transmission has been dropped, leaving a 7-speed dual-clutch automatic as the only choice. The front fascia is new, as is the black edition shown here, with surprise, surprise, blacked out trim inside and out. The new $3,795 Euro style package adds a Akrapovic titanium axle back exhaust system and blue seat trim while deleting the sunroof, front seat ventilation, and memory. And all power seat adjustments save the backrest. Why pay more for less stuff? Well, because the package shaves 80 pounds from the curb weight, which VW seems to think is worth some dough. Pricing starts at $48,325, and our black edition, Euro-style equipped, perhaps we should say D-equipped, listed for $53,731. Hot hatch couture, streetwear or suit? The Toyota GR Corolla wins the Eyeball 500 with its wide-body kit styling, more scoops than the TMZ homepage, and three exhaust tips poking out from the rear bumper. A cheeky reminder of the number of cylinders lurking underneath the hood. It makes the Golf R's styling seem rather dull, and VW doesn't help by only offering the R in blue or black paint. That said, the GR Corolla palette isn't much wider, offering only black, white, gray, or red, with an extra charge for the latter two. But the VW looks better on the inside, where the Black Edition's carbon fiber dash trim and the Euro-style blue-accented seats are a step up from the bland plastics of the Toyota's rather stock-looking Corolla interior. The Golf R's front seats, heavily bolstered like the Toyota's, are a little more generous for those of us who like our burgers with extra cheese, and the VW offers more backseat and trunk space as well. We're not fans of the infotainment system of either car, and we were also surprised that for $50,000, neither car gave us a nice-to-haves like a bird's-eye parking camera or power seat adjustment. And to think, VW charges extra not to have power seats. Luckily for both competitors, this comparison focused on dynamics rather than amenities. GR versus Golf R, by the numbers. While we were looking to find which car generates the most grins, we also wanted to get some baseline numbers, so off to the test track we went. We've tested several GR Corollas and have struggled to match Toyota's claimed 5-second flat 0-60 time. But the automatic GR came the closest at 5.1 seconds, that's 0.3 second quicker than the last two manual cars that we tested, both 2023s with the lower torque rating. To get it to 100 miles per hour took 12.3 seconds, 1.1 seconds quicker than the 23 six-speed GR Corolla, and the automatic car took down the quarter mile in 13.6. The Golf R was in a different class, blasting to 60 miles an hour in 4.1 seconds, hitting 100 miles an hour in 10.2, and crossing the quarter in 12.6. But the GR Corolla needed just 101 feet to stop from 60 miles an hour, 10 feet shorter than the VW's best stop. The Toyota, wearing Michelin Pilot Sport 4 tires, pulled 0.9 average G on the skid pad, while the Bridgestone Potenza S005 Golf R did 0.92. Pluses and minuses added up on our figure 8 handling course, which the GR Corolla circled in 25.1 seconds, just one tick behind the Golf R's 25. Bottom line, the Golf is quicker. The Corolla grips better. And the result is two cars that are rather evenly matched. But we've driven slow, ill-handling cars that delighted us and race-ready rides that bored us to tears. So it was time to head out for or to some of our favorite curvy roads and do a little thrill-seeking. Heart on a sleeve versus ace up its sleeve. If the Corolla's engine only gets a B for acceleration, it gets an A triple plus for effort. The 3 Badger has an aggressive, angry growl, and it pulls off as if Ted Lasso is under the hood cheering it on. Ultimately, though, the Toyota suffers from its lack of power. Passing slower traffic on a two-lane, and in either of these cars, all traffic is slower traffic, was a breeze in the Golf, but a white knuckler in the Toyota. Does GR Corolla's new automatic stifle the fun? Only if you let it. Left to its own devices, it's quick to upshift and drop the revs, even in sport mode. Once a Toyota, always a Toyota. Punch the gas and there's windup before the fastball pitch, which is thrilling but not always beneficial to smooth progress. The solution is at your fingertips. Engage manual mode and use the paddle shifters to keep the engine in its happy place, between 5,000 and 7,000 RPM. Here, at least, the transmission stays out of your way, letting the engine bounce off the rev limiter rather than forcing an upshift. The Golf R also has paddle shifters, but you won't need them. It has a dual-clutch transmission, which we consider the finest form of performance automatic because it can deliver smooth, full-power shifts with no hesitation and no weight transfer. We noticed some rough shifts during straight-line acceleration in Sport Plus mode, but in the curviest of curves, it behaved perfectly. Ask it for power, a trickle, or a torrent, and the Golf R's powertrain is instantly in the right gear, delivering exactly the amount of acceleration that you need, as if by magic or telepathy, and with eerie electric motor smoothness. In the Corolla, we drove with one eye on the tack. In the Golf R, we completely ignored it. Bonus, a quieter cabin because the Golf's 2-liter turbo doesn't need to run at max revs to give you its best. Two paths to the apex. In terms of steering feel, these two cars took radically different approaches. We expected the Toyota's combination of a small steering wheel and a quick ratio rack to have it darting to and fro, like a bloodhound trying to get on the scent. Not so. The GR Corolla tracks straight and true, with steering effort that loads up heavily as soon as you turn off center. While it's not twitchy or abrupt, it is hyper-responsive, and we had to be economical with our hand movements to stay on our chosen line. The Golf R's easygoing steering feels like an old Ford Falcon compared to the GR's strong centering effect, but once we cranked up our speed, it reminded us of the unassisted steering in a first-gen Porsche 911. Even in the stiffer modes, the steering stays light on center and then loads up progressively and proportionally as cornering forces build. Delightful. We drove the GR Corolla with hands clamped to the wheel. We drove the Golf R with our fingertips. What happens when you push too far? Both cars behave pretty much the same. The Golf R issues an early warning squeal from its front tires, while the GR Corolla stays mum, but both keep an iron grip on the pavement right up until they can't. You can evoke understeer if you're ham-fisted, and you'll feel both on all-wheel drive systems issue a corrective redistribution of torque to get the car pointed in the right direction by the time that you're ready to lay on the power. Still, the technique for going fast in both cars is the same. Blast into a corner, stand on the brakes, turn in, then mash the throttle and experience a sympathetic kinship with every projectile that has ever been fired from a cannon. Joy in the work versus joy in the rush. Which of the two cars did we enjoy more? Well, we'll be damned if we can tell you. The GR Corolla is all about the joy of the machinery, running it for blood to squeeze out every last drip of performance. The Golf R is all about the joy of the drive, providing a seemingly endless supply of thrust, grip, and feedback so you can delight in the raw thrills of a fast pass on a challenging road. The Golf R certainly felt quicker, or at least it felt like we reached the end of the road faster, but both were equally thrilling in their own way. And what are the times that we're not willing to risk a few stray points on our license? Both are noisy and hard riding compared to mainstream rides, with the Toyota as the slightly worse offender. Even the Golf's adjustable dampers at their stiffest setting, 2 notches to the right of race, does not quite jiggle and jostle you as much as the Toyota. But as harsh as it is, the GR Corolla never crosses the line that separates performance from punishment. Both cars have good adaptive cruise control and lane centering systems and halfway decent stereos that you can hear over the din. The Golf R is the more comfortable car, but the Toyota is surprisingly livable given its needles to the peg approach on life. GR Corolla versus Golf R. Which one is best? Picking a winner felt like a Sisyphean task, but a lot more fun than rolling a rock up a hill. If a fast attack on a curvy road is your idea of a good time, you cannot go wrong with either car, but we are not allowed to take the easy way out here at Motor Trend, so we must pick a winner. The GR Corolla is a splendid piece of machinery, as has ever graced our garage. The joy of the Corolla comes in pushing it as hard as it will go, taking the engine, suspension, and brakes right to their limits. But that doesn't mean knocking your head against the car's limits. The GR Corolla loves a good caning and still provides thrills aplenty, even if you dial it back a bit. Driving it fast feels like the perfect partnership between human and machine. And the fact that you need to use those paddle shifters to keep the engine humming is a reminder that the machine cannot operate at its best without a competent human at the wheel. Although noisier and harder riding than the Golf R, it is still a tolerable vehicle to live with. The GR Corolla is, by any measure, a monument to the art and love of driving. And the $39,995 base price makes it a gift, at least in stick shift form. How could a car like this lose in a comparison? Well, it can lose when faced with something like the Golf R. The Volkswagen is the more refined machine, and it does everything the GR Corolla does at a slightly higher level. It's quicker, both on paper and in the real world, a bit quieter, a bit more comfortable, and a bit more practical. While the GR Corolla begs for abuse, the Golf R makes achieving speed easier and more relaxing, allowing drivers of all abilities to feel like a deity behind the wheel. Of course, the Golf R is the more expensive car, but eliminating that Euro-style package, which we will happily take a sunroof and power seats over an 80-pound disadvantage, drops its price down to within a few bucks of the GR Corolla, and that makes it slightly more car for slightly less money. For that reason, the Volkswagen Golf R is the winner of the comparison. But if you choose a Toyota GR Corolla over the Golf, you are not making the wrong decision. The real winner is the lucky so-and-so who gets to choose between these two excellent automobiles. Our advice is to buy both. In second place, the 2025 Toyota GR Corolla. Pros: aggressive kid racer looks, hugely entertaining to drive, and overachieving engine. The cons: could use more power, transmission rev issues in auto mode, and noisy and hard riding. First place, the 2025 Volkswagen Golf R. The pros: surprisingly refined, family-friendly space, and easy to drive at high speeds. The cons: no manual option, bland styling and color choices, and noisy and hard riding, but not as noisy and hard riding as the Toyota. Next, from MotorTrend.com, a first look at the 2026 Nissan Sentra. New mugs and fancy cabin duds. The Sentra elevated interior style and more differentiated exterior designs help make it a more compelling offering. This is written by Miguel Cortina. Their demise has been predicted for years now, but sedans are still hanging around, despite the predominance of crossovers and SUVs in America's driveways. In fact, things remain surprisingly competitive in the compact four-door segment, with more than half a dozen impressive, affordable models still on sale, including the Nissan Sentra. That's why Nissan's sticking with the Sentra and making it better. As a result, the 2026 Nissan Sentra is getting a fresh look inside and out, more premium features for its top trims, and a stylish new take on its SR model. One Sentra, two faces. For the first time ever, the Sentra will have two faces from which to choose. The mug of the sporty 2026 Sentra SR is the easier one to spot, thanks to its fully blacked out trim and SR badging. Other Sentra trims swap in a different, largely body-colored grille designed to exude a more mature, upscale vibe. Both grilles feature diagonal slats that form a subtle V-shape, a nod to the brand's signature V-motion design, offset by slim, horizontal LED daytime running lights that jut inward at the top of the grille toward the Nissan badge. And when you unlock the car, you're greeted by a slick welcome lighting sequence on the SR and the newly reintroduced premium SL trim for 2026. The Sentra's trims are now S, SV, SL, and SR. It's the type of upscale touch that we haven't seen in the Sentra's segment until now, or even a segment above it. The SR keeps up its sporty appearance with black and chrome trimmed accents all the way around, two-tone 18-inch wheels, side skirts, mirror caps, rear diffuser, spoiler, and a floating roof all work together to give the Sentra SR a bolder, more athletic look than the rest of the 2026 Sentra pack. While the car's profile remains largely the same as the outgoing model, the rear also gets a stylish upgrade thanks to the addition of slim horizontal LED elements that echo the front lighting. Taken as a whole, the 2026 Sentra's exterior updates mark a big departure from past generations. It has a more modern, sporty, and confident appeal that should help it stand out from longtime rivals such as the Honda Civic and the Toyota Corolla. A surprising interior. No matter which trim you pick, every 2026 Sentra comes with a 12.3-inch infotainment screen with wired Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and three USB-C ports are standard. Step up to the SV and higher, and you'll get wireless CarPlay and Android Auto connectivity, while SL and SR premium models sweeten the deal with an 8-speaker Bose premium audio system. We had a chance to hop inside a Sentra in the newly reintroduced up-level SL trim and came away impressed by the cabin's layout and materials and choices. Highlighted by its so-called tailor-fit soft-touch leather look upholstery, it was done up in a stylish beige, black, and blue color scheme, highlighted by dual 12.3-inch screens. One for the driver and one for infotainment, and slick touch-capacitive controls for the climate system. Ambient lighting and a wireless charger round out the list of standard goodies for the SL. From what we have experienced of it thus far, the Sentra's upgraded cabin feels like a clear step up from the outgoing model, one that should at a minimum hold its own against the compact sedan competition. The brand's impressive safety and driver assistance tech, including standard and available features such as a class-exclusive 360-degree monitoring system, ProPilot Assist, and standard intelligent cruise control also amp up the overall Sentra package. Nissan is aiming for a bigger slice of the segment, and the new interior package should only help in that regard. Same-ish powertrain. We're digging what Nissan did to upgrade the 2026 Nissan Sentra inside and out, but underneath those reskins, there's not a whole lot else to talk about. Nissan chose to stick with the current Sentra's platform instead of starting fresh. The move helps keep costs down. Nissan slightly increased the car's rigidity to help improve the ride and made some minor adjustments to enhance comfort and reduce cabin noise, but there aren't any new powertrains or dimensional improvements. As a result, the 2026 Sentra makes do with the same naturally aspirated 2-liter four-cylinder engine, churning out just 149 horsepower and 147 pound-feet of torque, which is an average powertrain for the class. The good news is Nissan says the continuously variable transmission that it's mated to has been retuned for a smoother, more natural feel. So here's hoping that is the case, as the CVT has been one of our biggest complaints about the current model. The Sentra's fuel efficiency has long been a strong point, but we don't expect any changes to those numbers. The 2025 Sentra is EPA rated at 33 mpg combined for the SR and 34 mpg for the rest of the lineup. The 2026 Nissan Sentra is set to hit dealerships nationwide by later this year. Pricing details will become available closer to launch, but don't expect big changes. The current Sentra is one of the cheapest new cars that you can buy today, at $22,730 to start, and it tops out just short of $30,000 for fully loaded models. We expect the newly updated Sentra to stay right in that ballpark. Up next from MotorTrend.com, Volvo's flagship gets a big do-over. Major changes after a botched launch. The EX90 three-row EV SUV launch was marked by major problems and owner backlash. This is written by Eric Johnson. The Volvo EX90 three-row electric SUV was supposed to slingshot the Swedish brand into its all-electric future, the one where it promised to sell only EVs by 2030. Then the EV market cooled, U.S. policies became less favorable to EVs, and the EX90 itself suffered an ignominious launch filled with an entomology department's worth of software bugs. Now, just one model year after that launch, the EX90 is being thoroughly updated to potentially deliver the experience such a flagship model promises. First, a new central computer has been adopted, a powerful NVIDIA Drive AGX Orin unit. It centralizes many functions and enables adoption of more advanced automated driving and AI functions. Good news is that owners of 2025 EX90s will get an upgrade to this computer for free via a service appointment, which should hopefully fix many of the software ills that plagued their electric SUVs. The bad news is the 2025 owners will not get the biggest upgrade, the move from a 400-volt electrical system to an 800-volt one. This is the voltage that some of the fastest charging EVs on the American market use. Lucid runs its cars at 926 volts, and Chinese automaker BYD has a 1,000-volt architecture. In Motor Trend testing, it took 36 minutes to charge the 2025 EX90 from 5 to 80%, and another 24 to reach the 100% mark. It took 15 minutes to add 94 miles of range. Those are all back of the pack these days, but we expect the 2026 EX90 to make substantial improvements. Volvo says that it can now reclaim up to 150 miles of range in just 10 minutes. For reference, the fastest charging EV that we've ever tested, the Porsche Taycan, added 180 miles in 15 minutes. Other changes for 2026 include an automatic emergency call function for the emergency stop assist system, which will bring the car to a halt if the driver becomes incapacitated or otherwise ignores the car's warnings to pay attention or put their hands on the wheel. The automatic emergency steering system has improved night performance, and hands-free parallel parking has also been added. The EX90 includes all the necessary equipment and hardware to make it level 4 autonomous, so completely unsupervised, including a prominent LiDAR array above the windshield. But officials would not provide an updated timeline as to when that capability would be unlocked. During a roundtable interview this week, Chief Engineering and Technology Officer Anders Bell stated several times how sorry Volvo was for the botched EX90's launch, and that the company is committed to winning back the confidence of its customers. The 2026 EX90's updates are actions behind those words, but only time will tell if the broken trust can be repaired. Next, from MotorTrend.com, comparison test, different sausages, deliciously similar results. The 2025 BMW M2 versus the Audi RS3. They're very different cars, reflecting different car-making philosophies, but the M2 and the RS3 have a lot more in common than you might think. This is written by Scott Evans. Okay, hear us out. We know the 2025 Audi RS3 and the 2025 BMW M2 are very different cars. The BMW is a coupe. The Audi is a sedan. The BMW is rear-wheel drive. The Audi is all-wheel drive with a transverse-mounted engine. BMW is a manual transmission. The Audi has a dual-clutch automatic. The BMW has 6 cylinders, the Audi 5. I mean, what are we even doing here? Like German sausage, they have a lot more in common than you might realize. How the sausage is made. Obviously, both are German, both Bavarian even. Each is a compact two-row sports car, regardless of how you get to the back seats. They are priced within $5,000 of each other to start and within $4,000 of each other as tested. Both are fresh off a minor mid-cycle update. They're also, as we will see, nearly identical in terms of performance. Yes, they look and drive differently, but they are simply two different means of achieving the same result. The RS3 gets the bigger update of the two by a small margin. New front and rear bumpers, a new squared-off steering wheel, an optional RS Sport exhaust, and a faster powertrain control module, which allows for finer control of the torque vectoring twin-clutch rear axle. Power remains the same at 394 horsepower and 369 pound-feet. The M2's updates are even harder to spot, but equally noteworthy. A 20-horsepower increase finally puts it on par with the larger, heavier M3 and M4. Automatic transmission models also get a 37-pound-foot boost in torque. All told, it now makes 473 horsepower, and either 406 with the manual transmission or 443 pound-feet. It, too, gets a new steering wheel, which is fully round, along with a new curved widescreen display running the latest iDrive 8.5 software, a sharper head-up display, and a remapped throttle pedal. Oh, and now you can get it in wild colors like twisted purple. Different recipes, similar results. We're not kidding about the performance. Despite their wildly different powertrains, the RS3 and the M2 are right on top of each other in our instrumented testing. The Audi is slightly better in a straight line, the BMW better in corners. The Audi, with its all-wheel drive launch and hyper-responsive dual-clutch gearbox, is quicker in a straight line. The BMW has more power, and despite weighing more than a better weight-to-power ratio, it cannot overcome the Audi's superior launch and faster shifts. That said, you can get an M2 with an 8-speed automatic, and were you to do so, it would negate the RS3's advantage here. The last M2 automatic that we tested, a 2023, was dead even with the Audi at 3.5 seconds to 60 miles an hour, and 0.3 second quicker through the quarter mile, and it had less power and torque than the new model. Stopping, though, is the Audi's domain. Massive carbon ceramic brakes up front, and at least the third performance tire that we've tested on an RS3 in as many years, returned a clear winner, 98-foot stop from 60 miles an hour. The M2 needed an extra 3 feet, and the closest that we've seen one come to the Audi still took an extra 2 feet. Put him in a corner, though, and BMW surges ahead. A teensy bit higher lateral G and steady state cornering on the skid pad quickly turns into a figure 8 lap time that's 0.3 second better than the Audi. Part of this is grip, but it also illustrates how much more powerful the BMW is. The RS3 pulls hard, but the BMW pulls harder, especially from a roll. Like we said, the Audi's straight line advantage is in the launch. The RS3 is the more straight-laced of the two. Its trick differential does masterful work of making the car feel like it has a rear-biased all-wheel drive when the rear torque distribution maxes out at 50%. There's a hint of 2009 Nissan GT-R in how the RS3 puts its power down exiting corners, which is more than enough to invalidate any arguments about engine placement and orientation. The way adding power pulls the nose out of a corner rather than pushing it wide is found in precious few cars. BMW, on contrast, is old school. It's how you make the grip work with the rear drive power. Done correctly, you can induce a perfect rotation on the way out of every corner with the right application of power. The front end has more than enough grip, so you're in more danger of overdoing the rotation than pushing the nose out. Neither car will squeal its tires on a public road without truly reckless driving, but the BMW floods your brain with a bigger dopamine hit when you nail a corner. It's more work, though, and we're not just talking about the manual transmission. The BMW's steering feels jittery and high-strung at times until you adapt to it. Slow hands are the order of the day. Your inputs have to be very small, precise, and immediate. It's super easy to overdo it, but once you get a feel for it, the M2 comes alive. The throttle and brake pedals are similarly sensitive and require the same careful modulation. You have options with the power, though. Leave it a gear high, and you can use the prodigious turbo lag to your advantage. Getting on the throttle right at the apex and knowing you'll have the steering wheel nearly straight when the turbo hits. Or drop a gear and use the top-end power to rotate the car on the way out. Dealer's choice. All that sensitivity to inputs is exasperated on rough roads. The Audi, meanwhile, is rock solid. It's not fazed by anything. It is so hooked up, in fact, it can feel like it isn't even trying. The transmission is perfect on its own, so you can drop the mental load of choosing gears and just work the brakes and the steering. Any racing driver will tell you less work behind the wheel is a good thing. Of course, you could get the M2 with the automatic and make the same argument. And we deeply appreciate that BMW still gives us the choice. Yes, the RS3 is confident, mature, and supremely well-mannered by comparison, but the effort it takes to drive the BMW right plays out substantially better. The Audi does everything right, but like a toxic relationship, we find ourselves crawling back to the M2 looking for another rush. No small part of that is outright horsepower, because while the Audi takes off like a rocket, the BMW takes off like a rocket in a slingshot, It's addicting, and it's part of the reason that the BMW drains its tank 50% quicker. These things cost how much? More stuff plus inflation equals higher prices. The Audi is the relative bargain here, starting at $64,695 to the BMW's $69,375. After the latest round of price hikes, the RS3 takes to options like Germans to pretzels, piling on $11,000 worth for a total price of $77,045. Still, the BMW remains more expensive with a build price of $80,625. Value, though, is more than just the final sticker. Sitting in the Audi, you understand that it's been built from a much cheaper car. The quality of its materials is underwhelming for the price, and the software is outdated. It feels like a $40,000 A3 with green paint and a funky squircle steering wheel. Don't get us wrong, we love the green. And carrying it over into the interior trim and stretching and stitching is just the right amount of ostentatious. But it doesn't make the car feel nearly twice as expensive. The BMW, on the other hand, feels like it started life as a more premium, more expensive car. The materials are nicer across the board, and the new software looks contemporary and is easier to use than before. All of the M3-bar logos and color-matched stitching are equally ostentatious, but smartly done. Yes, it's more expensive, but it feels like it should be. The Audi gains back some of its value in road manners, though. The tires of both cars are loud over bad pavement, but the BMWs are considerably louder. Both cars settle down nicely at low speeds and are easy to drive around town, with the BMW riding just a little bit stiffer. Doing normal car stuff, the RS3's rear seats are certainly easier to get into, but are just as small and uncomfortable as the M2s are, so that is kind of a wash. It's a similar case with features. The M2 is missing a few things that you would expect at this price point, like adaptive cruise control, which is available with the automatic only, and effective lane keeping. The Audi covers those bases, though it does it through an older interface with odd choices of its own. Namely, it doesn't have a permanent gas gauge. Instead, there's a distance to empty readout, which is always displayed, but the gas gauge itself is buried in an instrument cluster menu. Who thought that was a good idea? Thank goodness BMW didn't, because the M2 gets way worse fuel economy, and if it were an EV, we would ding it for an EPA-rated range of just 260 miles. Driven like an M2, you'd struggle to get 200 miles out of a tank, but man, you will have fun during that time. So how do you pick? As is the case when tasting Bavarian sausages, if you bought either of these cars without test driving the other, you would never regret it. You'd have a great car that you love driving and never know what you're missing, and that would be just fine. Drive both, though, and suddenly you'll have strong thoughts. You'll have some of them, or you'll have more of them, about the BMW. Sure, it's a little more money, but for that, you got a car that's more powerful, is capable of posting better numbers in almost every category, is a nicer car inside, gives you the option of a manual transmission, and is even more fun and rewarding to drive. An RS3 owner can rightfully claim every dollar went to performance and only performance, but being right isn't everything, and it won't put a big smile on their face like driving the M2 will. Second place, the 2025 Audi RS3. The pros, supremely confident when driven hard, less expensive, and slightly more practical. The cons, the A3 interior for RS3 money, outdated tech, and a stupid gas gauge. The verdict, the sensible, logical, safe choice that you will not regret, but it won't deliver quite as much dopamine on demand. So first place, the 2025 BMW M2. Pros, it's crazy fun to drive, nicer interior, and offers a manual. The cons, nicer means more expensive. Range an EV would laugh at, and very loud tires. Verdict, the situationship, you just can't quit. And with that, we have reached the end of this edition of Bumper to Bumper. I have been your reader, J.J. Fabini, with the Audio Reading Service, part of the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Until next time, keep the rubber on the road and have a great week.